The Buck Sexton Show.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break. And at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.
We have our friend Tom Rogan from National Review and also a senior contributor to At Op Lives. He's a senior fellow at the Steamboat Institute. Tom, thank you for calling in. Good to talk to you.
Good to be with you, Buck. Thank you for having me on.
So I'm excited for the prospect of somebody with a British accent tearing apart the case for Hillary Clinton as president. You have in your piece here that you think that young people, specifically young people, should not vote for Hillary Clinton. Your piece is titled, Dear Young Americans, Don't Vote for Hillary. Tell me why, Tom. Why should young Americans not vote for Hillary?
Yeah, well, first, a caveat to always put out, because I know there's nothing that Americans hate more than a Piers Morgan type individual talking. I actually have U.S. citizenship, which I think you know, but your listeners might not. Anyway,
I'm just saying I like your cool accent, Tom, but go ahead.
Well, I know without the accent, my media career would be on a nosedive into oblivion. But the main points that I make with my article are that when Hillary Clinton articulates the role of an expanded government role in terms of both regulation and in terms of things like education and healthcare and taxes and benefits, the actual proven reality of what that does, because that has been happening in Europe now for a generation or more, is that it hurts young people the most. It fosters youth unemployment. For example, if you look at union power, the expanded power of unions makes it much harder for young people to enter the job market and to have that first step into social mobility. If you look at entitlement reform, Hillary Clinton now coming out very strongly against even the most basic reforms, raising the eligibility age in a staggered sense of people who are, you know, earlier in their life, and so it's something that could be planned ahead. She doesn't want to touch that. And if those programs are not reformed, the simple reality is that the country will go broke. And, you know, young people not only will not have those benefits, but will have to pay an ever-escalating tax burden to provide them from older citizens. So I think the central premise of my argument is that where Hillary talks about being the candidate who young Americans should be voting for, the reality is that she proposes policies that would take from the young to provide more to older citizens. And I think there's something morally, quite frankly, grotesque about that.
You also point out that her regulatory proposals, as I see here, cause problems. You're right. For example, she would force companies to provide 12 weeks of paid leave a year. Sounds great on paper. Who wouldn't like more paid vacation time? Yet the rule would break many small businesses that would not be able to afford the added costs. Meanwhile, Clinton only offers three lines on how she would cut red tape for businesses. This is no small issue. Regulatory extremism in America is smashing the middle and lower classes. This is another place where, by the way, I think that there's a whole argument to be made for how we need to get rid of the internship culture in this country, but that's perhaps separate from this. But it does make it harder for small business owners. The regulatory burdens of hiring anyone makes it harder for small business owners to open the kind of jobs that either unskilled or lower skilled people that are just getting started in the workplace would like to have. I know you mentioned unions, but the regulatory burden on small businesses and on people who are starting their own companies in particular is incredibly strong. And it hurts not just the young people who might start companies, but the people that might work for starting companies.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, that's the key point that you talk about, again, those small businesses. If we think about places across the country where people perhaps haven't gone to college and they haven't gone to trade school and they're looking for that first job and tending to be, you know, that they're at the lower end of the economic ladder, they're looking at that first job. If you have a system in which the burdens on an employer to have to provide these added benefits as a rule instead of as an incentive for specialized employees, of course it is going to make it much harder for them to employ people and to choose to potentially employ people, because of course businesses have to plan for the longer term, not just the moment. And again, it just comes down to that. You know, one of the other issues I talked about in terms of regulation is Dodd-Frank. And so when we have this sort of democratic consensus now about, you know, okay, great, more regulation, more regulation, more regulation. Fine, I think all of us would say some regulatory reform was needed, some more is also needed. But specifically looking at this idea that you can just impose these taxes without repercussions, I mean, look at Dodd-Frank. I'm sure a lot of listeners will have found their charges going up with their various bank accounts and their ability to access loans. And again, that's another issue, of course, for businesses. It's harder to access loans. And we talk about, you know, the final point, again, Hillary promising to double down on Obamacare, which, of course, has smashed young people. I mean, I think it's hard to find a young person who would say they think they are getting a good deal under Obamacare, but she wants to reinforce that. And then you think about the longer term, the regulatory impacts on that in terms of, you know, that you get to a certain level of employees, you have to provide that health care. So all of these things add up on paper to this sort of easy populist vein that Hillary Clinton likes to throw out, that if the rich person behind the tree, never defined, can pay for all of this. But the fiscal reality and the functional reality where these different policies would come into play, the people who would lose out most are the people who are youngest and least skilled and at the lower end of the economic ladder. And I have to say, as a candidate who claims to care a lot about income inequality, I think there really is a fundamental dichotomy between rhetoric and truth here.
Well, also, as a carrier of the message, Tom, I have to say, Hillary Clinton, it's hard to find a more seemingly hypocritical person to be talking about financial reform, to be talking about the role of money in politics. She's obviously trying to sort of hitch a ride to some degree on the Bernie Sanders enthusiasm, right? She knows that the establishment is still behind her, the Democratic establishment, but she would like to get some boost from the base, or at least kind of ride a little bit on the Bernie coattails until he gets too tired and all of a sudden it's clear that Hillary's the only real candidate. But I think it's really hard for Hillary Clinton to make the case that she cares about financial reform and the banks. I think it's really obviously disingenuous, even to a real leftist, even to people that are generally would have a proclivity to believe her and to like her, because it's just so flatly preposterous. This woman's giving speeches to Goldman Sachs left and right, telling them how awesome they are.
Right. Well, exactly. And look, there is that, you know, fundamental absence of trust. And you see that in the various ways, of course, on the Bernie Sanders, the left of the Democratic Party. There's the concern about honest speaking and honest policy on economics. And of course, on, you know, other elements of the country, there's the concern about honesty and trust in terms of, you know, Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. But I think the problem here is that, you know, at that functional level of detail, one of the big things that I think a lot of liberals, especially in the sort of liberal intellectual side and media, like to purvey is that liberalism is the way forward, that Europe is the proven example of a more equitable society in which people at the bottom, especially, and the middle income levels can benefit most. And I have to say, I think those people must have been looking at some very strange notions of European history, because the reality of the European social welfare state from Scandinavia, and people could just go and Google this, you know, go Google Norway social welfare or France social welfare, and look at the economic damage, look at the entrenched levels of youth unemployment, look at the lack of social mobility. All those tangible things are the product of policies that have been pushed over a long time that bear a very striking similarity to Hillary Clinton's idea that the way forward is to restrain the private sector or temper it into an ideological direction and to create the growth of government towards a social interest. It is not honest, and I think it's provably not honest, and that's what I'm trying to put across, that you can articulate the specifics of why this is such a problem.
I get the sense also that there's been this perception, and I think a lot of Democrats are trying to fan this perception, that Bernie is the purist and Hillary is the pragmatist. But actually, Hillary was a very far left senator. When you look at her voting record, she was to the left of Barack Obama when she was in the Senate, if you compare their two records side by side. She wants much of the same stuff that Bernie Sanders wants. She just sort of haggles a little bit more over how quickly we get there and what the price of it would be. I mean, sure, maybe she can't say free college, but she would be in favor of greater taxpayer subsidy for college. And she wants to use Obamacare as a vessel for the expansion of as much free coverage or subsidized coverage as possible. And I think the point that has to be made that we actually can't afford what he wants or what she wants. I think there's this notion that, well, she's the centrist, she's the realist on these issues. And the fact of the matter is, even her promises, if you were to extrapolate them out and look at them on a a timeline of costs over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Even Hillary Land is not a real place we can go.
Yeah, well, exactly. And look, I have to give my editor, Gillan Ferguson, some credit here, because when I did a piece on Bernie Sanders, the same idea, why young people shouldn't vote for him. And then Gillan said to me, well, actually, what about Hillary Clinton? Exactly what you're saying. And I think there is that fundamental problem. But I think one of the things that conservatives need to be much more active in doing is being able to articulate, okay, why is this idea that the government is going to take much greater role in terms of paying, for example, for education? Why is that bad? Well, it's bad for a simple reason. Because the person who didn't go to college and is working hard, either in their own business or working for an employer, people who are trade-skilled professionals, they are going to have to subsidize those things. Money does not come out of it, just out of the ether. And the final point, I think, is that liberals like to talk about these days the idea that taxes, you can impose higher taxes and you can have sustained economic growth, and they'll go back to studies, certain pickpocketed ideas from, areas of the 20th century. But the reality of today in the 21st century, where capital is so easily movable and people can move their wealth and move their profession, their skills to a locale where, the taxes are lower, the proof is that higher taxes don't work. And the proof of that, again, Europe, the United Kingdom, they tried to raise the tax rate up to 50% during the recession. And it had a really very, very low increase in tax revenue. I'm talking in sort of a few hundred million. And the actual assessment by the Treasury in the UK was that, look, this is actually deterring far more than it's bringing in. The same issue in France, that you see this economic decline. And so this idea, number one, that the rich can pay for everything, fiscally it doesn't add up by the basic sums, even if you're saying you're taxing them at 90%. But in the longer term, it will drive people away. And again, you look at
France. France drove Depardieu away, a national treasure.
Right. And again, I think you can also articulate this in terms of the United States. You look at the exodus of wealth and capital out of California, for example, into Texas. And I think over the coming years, we'll really this will be much clearer in terms of the statistics. But it requires that articulation. And most of all, it does require from conservatives that specific rebuttal of the Democratic line, the liberal line, that these policies would help those at the bottom of the economic ladder. Because I do think when it comes to it, in the proven facts and the policy realities, those are the people who lose out most. The wealthy can really insulate themselves from these changes, but those at the bottom of the economic ladder, they are the ones who are most hurt by this. And there's a really, I think, deep pernicious element to the sort of policy delusion that underpins all of this.
All right, well, you can see Tom's latest at National Review. Also, you're a panelist for the McLaughlin Group, correct?
I am, yeah. I'm about the youngest by about 45, but it's great to be on there with journalists who've been doing this a lot longer than I have. And, I get to joke around with McLaughlin, which is always fun.
That's cool. All right. Rock and roll. Yeah. Tom Rogan of NRO and elsewhere. Thank you very much for joining, buddy. Good to talk to you. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Buck. Appreciate it.
When our water heater broke down last month, it was a nightmare. It took 5 hours for the plumber to show up, and he charged us a couple of $100 just to come out. Then it cost another $1,800 to put in the new water heater. By the time it was all said and done, I felt like I'd been taken. But what else could I do?
The smartest thing you can do is get a home warranty from American Residential Warranty. Their home warranties pay to repair or replace all your major appliances when they break. And they will break, and at the worst possible time. Call American Residential Warranty right now for free information on home warranties starting at just pennies a day. Don't wait for your refrigerator to stop running or your ceiling fans to stop turning. Call American Residential Warranty right now. Ask how you can save up to 50% on washer and dryer coverage. Just call 1-800-686-3910. That's 1-800-686-3910. Again, 1-800-686-3910. Call now.